Jakarta, Indonesia. Here is Voice of Indonesia with English program. Presenting news, information, and entertainment from Indonesia. You can listen to our program through shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz. Online streaming, voanews.id, and RRI Digital Mobile Application. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world. From Listener, here is Highlight of the Week, presenting you what's happening in Indonesia this week with me, Steve. You can listen to this on the frequencies 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz. We are also available on online streaming on voanews.id and RRI Digital Mobile App. These are the top stories. Indonesian National Army celebrates 80th anniversary. MotoGP held in Mandalika, West Nusa Tenggara, and here is Highlight of the Week. President Prabowo Subianto has reaffirmed that Indonesian National Armed Forces, or TNI, serve as a bedrock of national defense. More story by Kiki Novitasari.
In a speech commemorating the 80th anniversary of Indonesian National Armed Forces, or TNI, on Sunday, President Prabowo Subianto emphasized the institution's critical function as the primary pillars of guarding national sovereignty. Prabowo stated that as the backbone of the nation's defense, the Indonesian National Armed Forces bears the responsibility of protecting all Indonesian citizens, asserting that its members must be prepared to sacrifice their lives for safety and security of the people and state.
TNI adalah tulang punggung pertahanan Indonesia.
The Indonesian National Armed Forces is the backbone of our defense that guarantees our sovereignty. The armed forces must be ready to protect the entire Indonesian nation and its homeland. It must be ready to sacrifice all of its life and body for the safety of the Indonesian nation and its people.
The president further urged the TNI to continuously modernize and adapt to the challenges of a rapidly evolving global landscape, which includes keeping pace with advancement in defense technology and navigating complex geopolitical shifts.
TNI harus menyiapkan diri.
The armed forces must prepare itself, continuously build itself, train itself, harden itself, master all necessary knowledge, keep up with the times, keep up with technological developments. The armed forces must not fall behind. It must not be negligent.
This year's 80th anniversary celebration, held under the theme TNI Patriots of the Unitary State of Indonesia, Guardians of Democracy for an Advanced Indonesia, was a display of military capability. The event featured an exhibition of advanced weapon systems, dynamic tactical demonstrations, including a hostage rescue drill and an aerial show by fighter jets. A parade of combat vehicles involving approximately 133,000 personnel further highlighted the ceremony's scale. Kiki Novitasari, Voice of Indonesia.
In a tribute marking the 80th years of Indonesian National Armed Forces, Foreign Minister Sugiono, former soldier himself, underscored or highlighted the critical partnership between diplomacy and military strength. Anissa Audrita has the details.
8 decades after the proclamation of Indonesian independence, the role of the Indonesian National Armed Forces, or TNI, is not only written in physical battles, but also in global diplomacy. In commemoration of its 80 years of service, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Indonesia, Sugiono, highlighted the inseparable synergy between professional military strength and the effectiveness of the nation's diplomacy on the international stage. Through a social media post on Sunday, 5 October 2025, Sugiono affirmed that Indonesian diplomacy has worked hand in hand with the armed force to ensure national interests remain protected on the global stage. The statement positions the Indonesian National Armed Force not only as a defense tool, but also a strategic asset in the Indonesian foreign policy.
Diplomasi dan TNI.
Diplomacy and the Indonesian National Armed Forces are a unity that cannot be separated. A strong, professional, clean, and authoritative soldier is a supporter of this nation's diplomacy.
Indonesia is one of the UN member countries that contributes significantly to UN peacekeeping force through the Garuda contingent. This effort demonstrated the synergy between defense strength and building a positive image of Indonesia abroad, which, according to Sugiono, is an important factor in global diplomacy.
Sinergi adalah kata
kunci. Synergy is a key word for the nation's esteemed name in the international world. A strong TNI is a pride for us.
On the occasion, Sugiono, who once had a career as an army soldier, also paid tribute to all soldiers who died in the line of duty. According to him, the sacrifice of all soldiers is a cornerstone that strengthens the institution's commitment to continue serving. Anissa Audrita, Voice of Indonesia.
The Indonesian government is boosting the utilization of life tables as a foundation for data-based policy to realize the vision of Golden Indonesia 2045. Nur Kamila has the details.
The Indonesian government, through the Ministry of National Development Planning, the Central Statistics Agency, or BPS, and several related parties, continues to strengthen data-driven development policies towards Golden Indonesia 2045. One of these efforts involves utilizing the Indonesian life tables. At a dissemination event on Monday, the Deputy for Social Statistics at the agency, represented by the Director of Population and Manpower Statistics, Ali Said, explained the basic concepts and uses of the life table.
It can be utilized or used to capture and calculate various aspects related to life extension and other closures that represent highly diverse groups within society.
Menghitung berbagai aspek terkait baik itu life expectancy maupun kebutuhan lain yang mewakili berbagai kelompok masyarakat yang sangat beragam tersebut.
Meanwhile, the Deputy for Community Empowerment, Population and Manpower at the Ministry, represented by the Director of Population and Social Security, Muhammad Holly Fihani, emphasized the importance of the life table as a basis for formulating evidence-based policies.
This life table can provide data that helps us. When we formulate policies, we certainly strive for them to be evidence-based, effective, and efficient.
The life table serves as a means to understand mortality patterns, life expectancy figures, and the health conditions of the population. This data acts as a compass for formulating inclusive, efficient, and sustainable human development policies in Indonesia in realizing the vision of Golden Indonesia 2045. Nur Kamila, Voice of Indonesia.
The MotoGP at Mandalika International Circuit West Nusa Tenggara was watched by more than 140,000 people on site. More story by Rama Shidki.
Place. He's already won here by a mile in Moto2, but this is extra special. The second youngest MotoGP winner in history, Fermin Aldeget.
The MotoGP motorcycle racing competition in Indonesia, the Pertamina Grand Prix of Indonesia, for this year's edition was held at the Mandalika International Circuit, West Nusa Tenggara, on Sunday, October 5th. The Mandalika Grand Prix Association, as the organizer of the Pertamina Grand Prix of Indonesia 2025, recorded more than 140,000 people came to watch the action of the international racers, an increase for the previous year, which was only 121,000 people. Indonesia's Minister of Youth and Sports, Erick Thohir, appreciated this achievement and also called the success an important step in promoting Indonesia.
Luar biasa.
Amazing. A breakthrough. 140,000 spectators. This is an achievement. We can see that the government from all industries, from the Minister of Tourism, the local government, we are solidly working together to ensure this MotoGP event is an important part of promoting Indonesia. Meanwhile, the governor of West Nusa Tenggara, Lalu Muhammad Iqbal, highlighted the increase in hotel occupancy on Lombok Island due to the MotoGP event. According to him, besides accommodations, the micro, small, and medium enterprises or MSME sector also enjoyed this increase. What is more visible is the impact on the local economy is very real, and the extended four rooms used are not only in Mandalika, but up until Mataram and Senggigi, they are also affected by the very high occupancy during this period. Previously, we could only accommodate 60 MSMEs. Now we accommodate more than 120. So from the top economy to the very bottom, all are affected by this. So this is a good momentum. In the 27-lap race, Gresini Racing team rider Fermin Aldequer from Spain managed to become the winner with a time of 41 minutes and 7 seconds. He defeated a number of MotoGP mainstay riders, including another Spanish rider, Marc Marquez from Ducati Course, who instead had an accident and had to undergo treatment. Ramasiki Pratama, Voice of Indonesia.
The Indonesian government continues to push for a 15% increase in the southern bluefin tuna catch quota during the 32nd Commission for the Conservation of Southern Bluefin Tuna, or CCSBT, meeting in Bali. Ofra has the detail.
Indonesian Minister of Marine Affairs and Fisheries Wahyu Sakti Trenggono proposed the increase in the 32nd meeting of the commissions in Nusa Dua Badung Regency, Bali on Monday. He said this step is crucial to assert Indonesia's fishing rights as a primary spawning ground for southern bluefin tuna in the region. Indonesia will continue to pursue the quota increase through dialogue and cooperation among member countries.
So the bluefin tuna spawn in Indonesian waters. Through these ongoing dialogues, we can continue to advocate for an increase in our fishing quota.
Furthermore, he explained that Indonesia is currently a member of the commissions along with 7 other countries, including Australia, Japan, and the European Union. During the 32nd meeting, member countries and cooperating parties discussed management policies, quota distributions, and evaluated each country's compliance with the commissions for the conservation of southern bluefin tuna regulations. Offering an Office of Indonesia.
The 13th International Fishery Symposium, or IFS 2025, kicked off on Tuesday, October the 7th in Semarang. Anissa has the details.
The 13th International Fisheries Symposium, or IFS 2025, aims to strengthen regional and global cooperation in achieving sustainable fisheries and marine resource management in ASEAN and beyond. Dean of the Faculty of Fisheries and Marine Science at Diponegoro University, Agus Rianto, pointed out that Indonesia's fisheries face complex challenges ranging from climate change to rising food prices and disease outbreaks.
As we all aware, the fishery sectors play a vital role in ensuring global food security, supporting livelihood, and sustaining marine ecosystem. However, this sector is also confronted with increasingly complex challenges ranging from the climate change, environmental degradation, the spread of diseases, and also rising costs of the feed and many more.
He further noted that local shrimp farmers are currently struggling with price drops due to international trade disputes and contamination issues, while coral degradation and sea level rise in the Java Sea continue to threaten marine biodiversity. He expressed hope that international collaboration and scientific exchange at events like IFS would inspire development of collaborative solutions
that can guide the future of sustainable fisheries. Building on that spirit of collaboration, Chairman of the ASEAN Fisheries Education Network, or ASEAN FEN, Muhammad Amin Alamsyah highlighted that gatherings such as IFS play a key role in strengthening partnerships across nations. He said that through shared experiences and innovation, the global fisheries community can collectively advance towards sustainability.
Conferences such as this one provide an opportunity to talk about common challenges, share best practices, and discuss groundbreaking scientific research and technology that will help our fisheries and marine industry grow, adapt, and innovate so they can meet the realities of tidal as well as the demands of tomorrow.
The 13th International Fisheries Symposium, or IFS 2025, themed ASEAN Fisheries and Marine Resources for Global Sustainability, runs from October 6 to 9 at Diponegoro University, Semarang. The event showcases recent research, innovation, and collaboration sessions to support sustainable fisheries in ASEAN, attended by more than 300 participants from 13 countries. Anissa Audrita, Voice of Indonesia.
The Indonesian National Nutrition Agency is speeding up the issuance of the sanitation and hygiene eligibility certificate for all nutrition fulfillment service units to support the free nutritious meal program. Ofra has the detail.
Head of the National Nutrition Agency, Dadan Hindayana, said the accelerations of the certificate issuance was to support the government's free nutritious meal programs. During a coordination meeting on the program with the Nutrition Fulfillment Service Units representatives across Central Java at Jatidri Sport Hall, Semarang City, on Monday, he said it is a strategic step to ensure they meet the operational standards set by the National Nutrition Agency.
Sertifikasi akan dilakukan secepatnya ya untuk yang sudah beroperasi.
Certification will be carried out as quickly as possible for those already operating, and within 1 month it will be completed. For new service units, they can only begin operations once their certificates are issued. The process is different. Existing units will be accelerated under the same standard. Meanwhile, new ones that have passed verification by the National Nutrition Agency may only operate after obtaining the certificate.
Meanwhile, to accelerate the certifications in Central Java Governor Ahmad Lutfi encouraged local health offices to strengthen mentoring and training for all kitchens. He emphasized the importance of synergy between provincial and district governments in ensuring that all units meet hygiene and sanitation standard.
Jadi 84 yang sudah punya sertifikasi nanti akan kita masifkan sehingga apa?
The 84 units that already have certification will be scaled up. The provincial health office will supervise district health offices to ensure the process is implemented as effectively as possible.
HK-nya, HS-nya secara tidak langsung dia bertanggung jawab untuk melakukan pengawasan.
Ahmad Lutfi hopes that the accelerations of certifications will not only ensure nutritious meals for students, but also bring a positive economic impact to local communities. Of a regional face of Indonesia.
The Indonesian government continues to push for equitable and improved quality of education through the launch of Garuda School Program. Desi Anugranov has full report.
Minister of Communication and Digital Mutia Hafid on Wednesday emphasized the importance of building a superior Indonesian generation through education that focuses not only on academic but also on character and global competitiveness. She stated this while attending the introduction event for Garuda School in Ambon. Mutia Hafid said that Garuda School is a strategic step toward equalizing education across Indonesia. She explained that the Indonesian government has currently launched Garuda School in 16 locations across various regions in Indonesia. According to her, the president wishes that this number will continue to increase until it reaches at least 80 schools or even more.
Dan ini yang beliau memang.
And this is indeed his wish that we will later produce outstanding children for the golden generations of 2045 from all corners of Indonesia. As we saw earlier, several schools that were launched today, there are 16 locations. This is just the initial starting point. Hopefully there will be many more later, as he conveyed that there would eventually be 80, and Mr. President always adds to the number he mentions. So if he says 80, usually the final number will be far more than 80. Hopefully that will be the case.
Mutia added that Garuda schools are designed to prepare students to continue their education abroad. According to her, President Prabowo Subianto hopes that these flagship schools will not only produce children who excel in science and technology, but also have strong character.
The President also desires flagship schools that don't just produce children who are excellent, children who are capable, especially in the fields of science and technology. But most importantly, what we must not forget, he also wants outstanding children who possess strong character. No intelligent person can become outstanding if they do not have strong character.
Garuda School is a national strategic program aimed at building integrated flagship school in every district. Garuda School are implemented through two schemes, namely New Garuda Schools, which are built in areas with limited educational access, and Transformation Garuda School, which strengthen senior secondary education and its teaching staff to enable them to produce student who can gain entry into the world's top universities. Desi Anugrano, Voice of Indonesia.
Russian Ambassador to Indonesia Sergei Tolchanov highlighted the commitment to deepening its strategic partnership with Jakarta. Putri Cahaya Purnama has the details.
The Russian ambassador to Indonesia, Sergei Tolchanov, on Tuesday affirmed his country's commitment to strengthening the strategic partnership with Indonesia. In an interview with Indonesia Business Post broadcast via YouTube Voice of Indonesia, Ambassador Tolchanov expressed high optimism for the future of bilateral relations between the two countries, calling Indonesia an important partner and respected global player.
We are big countries with global agenda, and it is natural that we have good relations, and we saw and still see and will see in the future in Indonesia important partner in this part of the world and globally, important player with its own voice, its own interest.
Sergei Tolchanov also highlighted the foundation of bilateral relation based on mutual respect for each other's sovereignty and national interest. He emphasized that Russia is always ready to consider Indonesia's position and interests and to collaborate in solving various global challenges. Furthermore, Ambassador Tolchanov specifically highlighted the closeness between the people of the two countries, which is an important pillar for the sustainability of bilateral relations. He assessed that the younger generation plays a key role in nurturing their relationship.
We are very close to each other, between people, youth especially, new generation. So that's why I'm very optimistic when I'm looking in the future of our relations. And
Ambassador Tolchanov expressed his hope to see more tangible results beneficial for both nations. One of the focuses is expanding people-to-people exchanges. He envisioned an increase in Russian tourist visits to various destinations in Indonesia, not limited to Bali. Conversely, he also opened opportunities for more Indonesians, such as students and professionals, to visit and study in Russia. Putri Cahaya Purnama, Voice of Indonesia.
Bank Indonesia held Indonesian Syariah Economic Festival in Jakarta. Nur Kamila has the details.
The Indonesian government is pressing for the growth of the domestic Syariah economy in an effort to achieve the national growth target of 8%. This was stated by the Coordinating Ministry for the Economy, Erlangga Hartanto, at the opening of the Indonesia Syariah Economy Festival of ISEF 2025 in Jakarta on Wednesday, 8 October 2025. According to him, the strengthening of the Sharia economy is being carried out by prioritizing in the 2025-2045 National Medium-Term Development Plan. This includes expanding Sharia people business credit, analyzing billion banks, and digitalizing the halal system.
Langkah ini diharapkan partisipasi publik.
Of course, yang lebih these steps are expected to lead to higher public participation. Thus, certainly, the role of the Sharia economy will be even greater. Honorable guests, the Sharia economy is not only about what is permitted and what is prohibited, rather it is a path towards just, inclusive, and sustainable development. With an optimistic yet vigilant spirit, let us make the Sharia economy the driving engine towards the Golden Indonesia 2045 vision. ISAF is a momentum to birth innovation, expand global networks, and present concrete solution for building an inclusive, just, and sustainable economy.
ISAF menjadi momentum untuk melahirkan inovasi, memperluas jejaring global, serta menghadirkan solusi konkret untuk membangun ekonomi yang inklusif, adil, dan berkelanjutan.
Erlangga explained that Indonesia has considerable fortunes in the Sharia economy based on data from the Global Islamic Economy Report. Indonesia is recorded as the country with the third largest Sharia economy growth in the world. According to Erlangga, Indonesia has strength in the modest fashion industry, halal tourism, and halal pharmaceutical and commerce. Furthermore, he said Indonesia also has high potential in the halal food and beverage industry sector, with a value reaching $109 billion. Nur Kamila, Voice of Indonesia.
The Indonesian government continues to push for accelerated implementation of ASEAN Digital Economic Framework Agreement, or DEFA. Ofra has the details.
Indonesia hosted the 14th round finalizations meeting of the ASEAN Digital Economic Framework Agreement, or DEFA, in Jakarta. Coordinating Minister for Economic Affairs Airlangga Hartanto stated that the meeting to finalize the agreement is a significant step in strengthening the region's digital economic integrations. He conveyed this during a press conference for the 14th round of ASEAN DEFA negotiations in Jakarta on Thursday. He said the outcomes of this meeting are expected to significantly accelerate the implementations of the agreement in the coming years.
Dalam pertemuan ASEAN Economic Minister sebelumnya, ditargetkan bahwa pertemuan di Indonesia.
In the previous ASEAN Economic Ministers meeting, it was targeted that this meeting in Indonesia, Jakarta, will push DEFA to achieve 70% of the progress that can be made by 2026. And this is, of course, very important to be implemented.
Dan tentunya ini menjadi sangat penting untuk bisa dilaksanakan.
Furthermore, Erlangga stated that Indonesia has led the ASEAN digital economy with a value of $90 billion in 2024, which is projected to increase to $360 billion by 2030. He explained that DEFA, which was proposed 2 years ago, is designed to be aligned with regulations in the micro, small, and medium enterprises sector. Erlangga hopes that agreement can be signed in 2026 and implemented promptly to drive the growth of the digital economy in the regions. Ofra Regina, Voice of Indonesia.
The bird's head seascape in West Papua has become a successful example of implementing a co-management model for marine resources. Anissa has the detail.
Empower this community. And I hope this conference with the participants, scientists, can actually move towards this. We empower the community so that we can protect our marine resources.
Associate Professor Nur Faizul Hadri bin Nordin from the International Islamic University Malaysia cited that bird's head seascape in West Papua as one of the best examples of implementing a co-management model in marine resource management. He conveyed this as the third panelist at the 13th International Fisheries Symposium, or IFS 2025, held in Semarang on Tuesday, October 7, 2025. According to him, this 22.5 million hectare area in West Papua has demonstrated the importance of global collaboration in supporting marine resource governance.
One of the good keys for this hybrid or co-management, okay, like what we have in Malaysia, Tun Mustafa Park, it's a multi-stakeholder governance, and also the Cape Archipelago in Cambodia. And of course, we have a Bird's Head Seascape from Indonesia. This is a few examples of a good hybrid or co-management in terms of marine resources.
He added that before the year 2000, the Bird's Head Seascape area faced serious challenges such as declining fish stocks and damaged marine habitats. However, since 2004, through close cooperation between the government, local indigenous communities, and various organizations, the area has shown significant change.
They bring back the Sasi Laut practice. Yeah? And because of that, okay, we have the outcome, fish biomass increase of more than 29% in no-take zone within 5 years. Okay. Destructive fishing reduce, okay, they have the socio-economic benefits, and now they have become more famous, or very famous ecotourism area.
Nur Faizul explained that the Bird's Head Seascape is now globally recognized as one of the world's largest networks of community-based marine conservation areas. This region is home to more than 70 species of reef fish, corals, and crustaceans found nowhere else on the planet, leading coral reef scientists to call it an evolutionary cauldron and species factory. The area is also boasts the biggest remaining nesting beaches for the critically endangered Pacific leatherback turtle, the largest and fastest swimming turtle in the world. Anissa Audrita, Voice of Indonesia.
Indonesian Coordinating Minister for Community Empowerment Mohaimin Iskandar has requested all Islamic boarding school in the country to temporarily halt the construction of building and educational facilities before obtaining official approval from the government. Putri Cahya Purnama has the details.
The Coordinating Minister for Community Empowerment Mohaimin Iskandar on Tuesday requested all Islamic boarding schools to temporarily halt construction undertaken without a building construction approval. In a press statement delivered in Jakarta, Mohaimin emphasized that this is done to ensure educational buildings and facilities meet safety and security standards.
I ask all boarding schools that are currently building to temporarily stop because they must have a permit.
While acknowledging that many older Islamic boarding schools value their independence, Mohaimin Iskandar still urged the Kiai and boarding school figures to comply with the laws regarding building construction permits. Meanwhile, at the same event, the Minister of Public Works, Dodi Hanggodo, ensured that his ministry is ready to assist in the reconstruction of boarding schools deemed vulnerable by allocating the use of the state budget for emergency conditions.
So far, the budget for Islamic boarding schools has actually been with the Ministry of Religion, but this is for emergency situations, and in Sidoarjo, we are the ones who will definitely be involved.
Dodi is optimistic that the process of mitigating and repairing vulnerable Islamic boarding school buildings will proceed quickly, supported by the presence of the ministry's team spread across all regions of Indonesia. Putri Cahaya Purnama, Voice of Indonesia.
And that's highlight of the week.
Thank you. Protect our children, let us pray.
Listener, proper spatial planning can reduce disaster risk. How does it work? How is the spatial planning and disaster risk reduction is implemented in the country? Here is our VOA talk with the Assistant Deputy for Disaster Risk Reduction, Coordinating Ministry for Human Development and Culture, Andre Noto Hamijoyo.
Voice of Indonesia.
And it was his voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world listener. Do you really feel safe right now? Because probably you are not safe if you're not paying attention to spatial planning, and this can go from smaller scale into even the larger scale. And without a proper planning, when disaster hits, well, it can be disastrous. And to talk about this, we will talk about the right spatial planning to reduce disaster risk. We'll talk about it with the Assistant Deputy for Disaster Risk Reduction, Coordinating Ministry for Human Development and Culture, Pak Andre Noto Hamijoyo. Good morning, Pak Andre.
Good morning. Good morning, RRI, your voice of Indonesia, and good morning all of the listeners of RRI.
Okay, Pak Andre, thank you very much for joining us. So, could you explain to us what kind of spatial layout that is proper to reduce disaster risks, sir?
Yeah, actually, this day is the National Spatial Planning, yeah. It's commemorated every November, we prepare for the National Spatial Planning Day. What kind of the nation spatial planning? Yeah, then you misunderstand of the importance of the spatial planning. Yeah, National Spatial Planning. We should raise public awareness of the importance of sound spatial planning and management. And what is kind of the spatial planning? The spatial planning and the disaster risk is has a relationships, strong relationships, because the spatial planning and disaster potentials is that inappropriate spatial planning can increase disaster risk, while disaster-based spatial planning can reduce vulnerability and the impact of disasters. Spatial planning is responsible for managing land use, limiting development in vulnerable areas, and directing land use to align with the disaster potentials in the area, such as the establishing protected areas to prevent landslide or flooding. And how spatial planning reduces disaster risk? The first, because of the development restrictions in disaster-prone areas, if we identify zones prone to earthquake, tsunamis, floods, or landslides, spatial planning can prohibit or limit the types of development in those areas. And the second is the land use regulations, about the directing development to several areas and protecting water catchment areas or conservation areas that functions as disaster absorbers. And the third is mitigation infrastructures development. And for the incorporating the development of supporting infrastructure for disaster mitigations, such as adequate evacuation routes or disaster resistance building into spatial planning plan. And the last but not least is about the regulatory enforcement. You understand that enforcing risk-based regulations and zoning to prevent spatial planning violations that could increase community vulnerability to disasters.
And we know that Indonesia is, so many places in Indonesia are prone to disaster. We live in the ring of fire. We have lines of volcanoes. There are risk of earthquakes. There are getting more and more. More spots are identified. Right, we are talking right now. And also the global warming caused extreme weathers. And how do you see then the spatial planning in Indonesia? Has it followed the right way to make sure that the planning will really reduce the risk of disaster in Indonesia, or is it still need more work to reduce the risks?
Proper spatial layout can help avoid or reduce the impact of the disasters like floods, tsunamis, landslides, and sea level rise by strategically zoning areas for specific land uses and developing resilience infrastructures. But it's less effective for rapid, unpredictable events like earthquakes and typhoons. By understanding and mapping disaster-prone areas, spatial planning can guide development away from high-risk zones and implement structural measures to mitigate these threats. And it is important for us, for all of us, how to make for the. It is important for us. I'm sorry. How to implement for the structural measures to mitigate these threats. And some examples for disaster mitigated by spatial planning, such as flooding. Spatial planning can design it flood plains as open space or not residential areas. Rather than residential zones, to reducing the risk to communities. For the landslides, by analyzing topography and soil conditions, planners can prevent constructions in areas prone to landslides, a hazard that can be exacerbated by constructions in vulnerable areas. And how about the tsunamis? Maybe establishing buffer zones in coastal areas and implementing resilient land use regulations can protect communities from tsunami inundations. Because we have experience with the tsunamis, to establish buffer zone in coastal areas is very important things. And the implementing resilient land use regulations can protect communities from the tsunami. And how about the sea level rise and land subsidence? This slow onset disasters can be managed with spatial plans that regulate development in vulnerable coastal areas, directing it to several locations. And about drought. Spatial planning can inform from agricultural practices and land use decisions to improve the resilience in drought prone regions, minimizing the impact on communities and the food security.
And sir, we were talking about spatial planning. The word planning means, for some people, maybe the common people like me, it's thinking about something we need to prepare for tomorrow. But what about those people who has been living, for example, near a volcano, next to a river, next to or on the land that is prone to landslide? What can be done for them? Should they be moving? Should the government enforce the law so that they will be relocated? Or is it any other way?
Yeah. Indonesia already has many ways to reduce disaster risk. Such as the integrating disaster risk reductions, or DRR, into national development. Investing in early warning systems. For the developing final financial mechanisms like the National Disaster Risk Finance and Insurance Strategy, or the conducting community educations and promoting multi-stakeholders collaborations. We should strengthen for the key strategies and the initiatives. As for example, from the National Development Integrations, disaster risk reduction is a national development priority incorporated into the national budget and planning to foster resilience. And how about the early warning system? Indonesia now is investing in advanced forecasting technologies from the BMKG, the forecasting technology and systems like the INAWARE and the disaster monitoring and response systems to improve hazard monitoring, disaster response. and also for the early warning capabilities. How about the community educations? Now, it is very important side, because we should strengthen for the community educations. There is an emphasis on community educations and awareness programs for disaster mitigations, empowering people to take proactive measures. And of course, for the multi-stakeholder collaborations, it should be a collaboration between all the stakeholders. There is a growing effort to enhance collaborative governance, bringing together different stakeholders, including local government, private sectors, and non-governmental organizations, to tackle a systemic risk.
And sir, we have been talking on the government level, private sector level, but what about individual level? What they need to do in terms of spatial planning and disaster risk reduction? What we can really do in our daily life?
Yes. As I explained previously, for the community educations and multi-stakeholders collaborations should become the basics of the disaster risk resilience, because this is the key how to strengthening for disaster risk resilience from the community educations and the multi-stakeholder collaborations. And it's become for the informations, the complete informations, and how to know about the disaster impact and the potential of disasters in for the community, and how to strengthening to know about the disaster risk and the disaster risk in every area. And of course, community educations should be strengthening with all of the enhance of the multi-stakeholder collaborations.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. But Andre, we got what we needed, and we wish that people will pay more attention to the spatial planning, so that even if the world may be full of risks, we can reduce the risk and mitigate the risk. Thank you very much, Pak Andre.
Thank you very much.
Listener, that is Assistant Deputy for Disaster Risk Reduction, Coordinating Ministry for Human Development and Culture, Andre Noto Hamijoyo. And you can listen again to this talk on our YouTube channel, VOI Official.
Voice of Indonesia.
RRA Digital with New Look. Various collaborative content from various national programs, including live visual broadcasts, live radio broadcasts, music playlists, podcasts, video news, and various users' interaction features in the game. Various interesting content such as likes, comments, and shares, as well as live chat with broadcasters and users. Direct messaging and private chat facilities between app users are also available. RRI Digital, available on Google Store and App Store. RRI Digital.
Nona janta lalu pasang gaya depan kakak jadi jatuh kakak tak bola balik lia ade nona semakin menyala kakak hati susah ade bikin kakak mete tidur malam bola balik sejak kakak lia ade aduh Tuhan ampune.
lewat lorong depan rumah. Kakak jadi salting sampai mood berubah. Semangat tiba-tiba gara-gara ada nona. Ini bidadari timur siapa yang punya. Kakak lacak kopu nama. Barang itu terpakai lama. Langsung tanya di kopu mama. Ternyata ada nona kopu nama Maimunah. Eh Maimunah, lucunya. Kakak harap bisa satu rumah. Kalau terima satu cinta, kakak janji kita langsung nikah.
Listeners, thank you very much for listening to our program. Please leave some comments and questions to voilisteners@gmail.com, RRI Digital, and our social media, Facebook, The Voice of Indonesia, and TikTok, VOI_official. You can also listen to other talks on our YouTube channel, VOI Official. I'm Steve. Thank you very much for listening. Stay tuned on RRI Digital Service, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.